The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
To start by finding a comfortable posture. Perhaps taking stock of where this body is, how this mind is in this moment. Just whatever's here. Noticing sensations, sounds, emotions, attitudes. Noticing the closed eyes, any other visceral or sensed objects. Noticing how am I overall? And allowing that, receiving that. Inviting the body to relax. May this body relax. The outer layers of the body, such as the superficial muscles of the face, shoulders, torso, hips and legs, feet and hands, and inviting relaxation of the inner layers of the body too. Whatever those are, the throat maybe, the belly, inviting to relaxation of the heart and mind. May this heart and mind relax. Softening any internal attitude. Allowing. Noticing too the quality in the heart and mind today. Perhaps the quality of awareness, mindfulness itself. Is it spacious or very refined and focused? Is it relatively present and stable? Or is the mind hopping all over the place, distracted? It's all okay. Just notice. Appreciating whatever quality of the heart and mind is present right now. And two, bringing interest to this moment. What's this moment like? This one. Perhaps now and then dropping in a question mark. Can have words attached, such as, am I aware? Or just the inquiring, interested impulse to be here in this moment. Receiving. thank you all for your practice. Just going to move the microphone one moment here. Hello again, and today I'm going to talk about a teaching that Sayadaw Utejaniya often gives in his books and his answers to questions, which is three levels of wisdom. Those are, in the Pali, Suttamayapanya, Chintamayapanya, and Bhavanamayapanya. And they mean respectively, Maya basically means by means of. So it is wisdom by means of hearing, sutta, like discourse. Wisdom by means of thinking or reasoning, chintamayapanya, and wisdom by means of meditation. And it is kind of like three successive layers of depth or kind of waves that the practice percolates through the heart, the mind, the body, the life that we live. So this first one, Suttamayapanya, heard or read wisdom. That includes reading, listening to Dharma talks, even Buddhist lectures. And there's some ways to relate to it that can help it deepen. One is to give it wise attention. How does this resonate? Does this teaching evoke a sense of my life experience? Does it pick up on themes or things that have already occurred in my life? And then there's also bringing investigation at that level, which might be, how does this particular teaching fit? Does it fit? Just looking at that. When I was contemplating this talk, one discourse that came to mind is the Kalama Sutta, which many of you have probably heard of. And it is a group of people, the Kalamas, who live in a village where lots and lots of spiritual teachers come through. And so they hear all different kinds of people saying that their Dharma, their doctrine is the best and that everybody else is wrong. Problem is, all the teachings are conflicting. They're very absolute and conflicting. And the Kalamas just kind of throw up their hands and they're confused. So the Buddha comes through and they don't relate to him as their teacher. They haven't gone for refuge with him, but they're relating to him as a wise counselor. And they ask, how do we figure out which of these teachings are right and which are not, given everyone is saying all these conflicting things? And this sutta has been quoted many times. I'm not going to give the main quote people usually give, but I'm just going to say that in the course of helping them reason through, he actually discourages sort of reputation, charisma. He discourages speculative reasoning or philosophizing. But he does encourage a certain kind of intelligence and reasoning, empiricism, if you will. And that is attending to how the teachings apply in your own experience, and particularly attending to the effects of the conditions that give rise to and the effects of greed, hatred, and delusion, and their opposites. So one of the questions the Kalamas asked was this confusion about, does rebirth happen? Doesn't it happen? And the Buddha doesn't take a position on that. He doesn't give a view on that. Instead, he encourages them to look at, what is the effect of greed in this mind? What is the effect of greed in this life, of hatred on this mind, this heart, this life? What is the effect of delusion on this mind and heart and life? And what are the effects of the opposites? And by this kind of Socratic method, cross-questioning, he evokes from them, well, I'm very much paraphrasing and being a little glib here, greed, hatred, and delusion lead to nothing good, and their opposites, the wholesome factors, lead to benefit, lead to good results. And so he encourages them to stop thinking about the speculative and to really look at conditions, cause and effect, how it applies in their own lives. In that way, his teaching was, whether or not there's rebirth, it's all good, right? If you adhere to, orient to wholesomeness, a wholesome life, you'll have a happy life. And if there's rebirth, then you'll have a happy rebirth. But if there isn't, you haven't lost anything, right? So the Buddha encourages in his discourses, his teachings, this ahipasako, come and see for yourself. And this involves some of the second level of wisdom I'm talking about today, which is cintamayapanya, this discursive thought, reasoning, application of concept. And there's a range here, a continuum of this kind of wisdom. On one level, it is just hearing and speaking, talking it over with friends, reasoning. Talking it over with Dharma friends can be really helpful if when encountering a teaching or when considering what might be wise or not wise. In fact, there's a quote given a few times in the suttas where the Buddha talks about spiritual friendship being a proximate cause, a very important condition for awakening itself. That's how important it is to cultivate and maintain some kind of sangha relationship, formal or informal. So thinking it over, talking it over, applying reason. There's also journaling, cross-questioning, the Socratic method of applying, well, do you think this is true? Yes or no? Okay, let's look at the opposite. Yes or no? What are the effects of it? It's bringing intelligence to Dharma practice through cultivation. The next kind of level or range in the continuum of cintamayapanya, this reasoning, would be applying the concepts of the Dharma to daily life. And this could be, for example, the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering. There is the cause of suffering, origin of suffering, that is. There is the end of suffering, and there is the path to the end of suffering. It can be as simple as that application or heuristic to, oh, there's suffering in this moment. Where did it come from? What might help it ease in this moment? It's that kind of application. Eventually, this kind of reasoning can help kind of restructure how we relate to things through the lens of the Dharma. And I've seen people gain huge amounts of maturity and wisdom. People who don't have time to sit a lot of retreat, by instead very consciously looking at their events of their lives through the lens of different Dharma teachings, whatever they may be. It cultivates a certain kind of really pragmatic wisdom. So then, at this level of cintamayapanya, it can also be really helpful to consciously turn attention and application of these teachings to this heart, this mind. So it's not just a philosophical look at the world or my life, but it is there a reaction? Is there a response in this heart, in this moment? Or is there a reaction? little bit of aversion or greed or whatever it is, delusion. In other words, noticing the actions of body and speech and mind and their results. And one discourse in the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length discourses, the Buddha names, the wise are skilled in actions and their results. The wise are skilled in actions and their results, which is a really simple, direct way of talking about karma, kama, and vipaka, results. Kama means action, vipaka, fruit or results. So, some of the Chintamaya Panya shades into meditation, bhavana, the third level, but we're talking about right now applying intelligence to the meditation practice itself. So I like to mention this in particular because meditation often isn't taught this way, especially to beginners, and sometimes even to very experienced students. But it was such a revelation for me that it's okay to bring all of my intelligence to the practice. All of the mind can come to the practice. It's a matter of how it's oriented. So this is kind of Chintamaya Panya, this orientation to using concepts and thinking in meditation is all over the discourses. For example, in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which is often the sort of grounding discourse for this tradition of Buddhism, there are the 32 parts of the body meditation, or the meditation on body parts and on the corpse and on different ways of looking at experience that involve a conscious thinking. In other discourses, mindfulness of death is a contemplation and even involves, you know, phrases, imagination, willful application of thought. And then there's something all of you have heard of and probably practiced, the practices of the immeasurables or the Brahma Viharas, metta, loving kindness, compassion, karuna, appreciative joy, mudita, and equanimity, upekkha. And these can be practiced in different ways. Often people will use phrases, right? Ideas. And even when we don't, and often when I teach it, I believe I'm teaching it this Friday at IMC, actually, for happy hour. Often as we do these practices, it can be more about visualization, imagination, intention, skillful use of imagery, thought, even aspiration towards a certain way of thinking or being. So each of those involves a little bit of this conceptual application. Sayadaw Utejaniya, Andrea's root teacher and a very important teacher for me, he points out that Chintamaya Panya, this reasoning faculty, is also really important to vipassana, to open awareness, receptive interest, even to breath meditation, because it is sort of part of investigation of states, wise investigation, in the Pali, Dhamma Vichaya. And that is just a huge benefit to maturing the practice, deepening the practice, and towards awakening. Dhamma Vichaya, noticing what's happening in the heart and mind with curiosity, interest, gathering information, bit by bit, gathering information. And through that, seeing greed, hatred, delusion, and all of their buddies and henchmen, and all of their opposites, the beautiful states, kindness, mindfulness, love, interest, compassion, wisdom itself, all of the seen and gathered, seeing thoughts rather than reflexively believing thoughts, right? In this sense, seeing even greed, hatred, or especially delusion is good news because it's gathering this information. It's helping wisdom develop. Rather than something to get down about, it's the light of awareness, the light of mindfulness has shone on something that wasn't seen before. And that is the way it transforms. Or if it's wholesome, skillful, the way that it grows. Noticing, Kamavichaya, investigation, noticing the actions of the heart and mind in their natural habitat, right? Noticing what the mind does this way, that way. This is noticing what's occurring and noticing the impact, noticing the results without necessarily needing a certain result to happen in the moment, because it's all part of the wisdom gathering process, all part of it, right? So this is parts of the third and fourth foundation of mindfulness. Mindfulness of mind, or mindfulness of citta, also translated as heart. That is noticing the qualities of awareness. Is it spacious, contracted? Is it distracted and popping all over the place, or is it steady? Is there a wider range to what the mind can see and feel in this moment, or is it kind of ordinary? None of those things are inherently wrong or bad. They're just processes to notice and be with and be aware. That's all third foundation. And then fourth foundation covers so much material, right? Sankharas, thoughts, emotions, ideas, beliefs, all of the things that hinder meditation and most of the things that help it, the factors of awakening. All of that. And very importantly, the fourth foundation includes an understanding or seeing cause and effect, or conditions and results, actions and results. Noticing, gathering information. The open awareness practice is particularly well suited to doing that because nothing gets left out. Nothing gets left out. Just all of it is fuel and food for the meditation process itself, right? Which leads to bhavana mayapanya, wisdom. Wisdom by means of meditation or cultivation. So mindfulness, awareness, sati has gathered all of this information, seeing, understanding, actions and results, conditions as they have come to be. And as that percolates, as that settles, as that moves through, that results in a kind of emergent wisdom, visceral wisdom. And there's many flavors of it. It's not a discursive, reasoned out, thought out wisdom, but it's something that tends to pop in. It's either a gathering knowledge or sometimes a bolt of insight, right? But it's a knowing, and it can come in all of these different forms. Big picture, holistic, finely discerning, penetrative, joyful, more intuitive. It can come as a word or a phrase that emerges up. At this level, it's no longer so helpful for investigation, curiosity, to be really active, to be really excited, What I found more helpful in this kind of level of wisdom is a receptive interest. A receptive interest can help it grow. Leaning in can often bring some greed, and that doesn't tend to help wisdom grow. So there's a number of different kinds of wisdom, and I'm certainly not going to cover all of them this morning, but just talk about a few. A classic one that is talked about so much in early Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism, is insight into wisdom about inconstancy, anicca, about the impersonal, uncontrollable nature of what is unfolding, anatta, and about relating to the fact of suffering, dukkha, and especially how we relate, how the heart, the mind relates to dukkha, to unsatisfactoriness, pain, suffering, without adding layers on to make things worse. The insight into dukkha involves a sense of that, not making things worse, not adding that second arrow, third arrow, tenth arrow, the mind. The insight into dukkha doesn't mean, of course, that the world's dukkha, natural dukkha, goes away. Of course not. Wish it did, but we're talking about the dukkha the mind and heart add on to a situation, to the suffering that's in the insight level. We're talking about relating to the suffering that's already there, whether it's a disease process or dying process, or it's systemic racism or environmental degradation or whatever it is, relating to that with wisdom and insight into what conditions are able to be shifted for the beneficial and what aren't. It's simply coming into alignment with what is, but not in a fatalistic way, in a way that acknowledges that each and every moment then presents an opportunity for a moment of awakening, of shifting causes and conditions, even just a micron, tiny bit, towards something more skillful, more beneficial. Wise attention towards wisdom is attending to it, trusting it, right? Trusting it rather than running outside for something else. And there's wise attention is actually one important kind of wisdom. Another that I've been talking about throughout this is wise attitude. Wise attitude. And there's many flavors of wise attitude. One of the most commonly taught, especially in the teachers in the Sayadaw Utejaniya lineage of this more open awareness and mindfulness of mind, is a flavor of okayness or equanimity. And that's a profound form of wise attitude. There are others. There's holding it lightly, not taking things too seriously or personally. That is a huge, beautiful support for wisdom to grow. Metta, loving awareness, can be a form of wise attitude, as can compassion, patience, interest itself, but interest without a need for outcome. So that wraps us back around to the beginning of this talk, the Sutta Mayapanya, listening. So there's wisdom at every stage of this process. And the beautiful thing about that means that this wise attitude, this having seen and known for ourselves at any in any way wraps right back around into how this mind, this heart, this life is able to metabolize heard teachings, read teachings, discussed teachings. So it's almost like a beneficial cycle that can happen. And because wise attitude is so important, it will be my subject the next time I talk on Tuesday morning, which will be a few weeks, but that's what it'll be. So thank you very much for your kind attention. I'm going to stop the recording.